Backseat Producers, episode 128, Airplane. Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Chris. Masquerading as Adam.
And we are the Backseat Producers. So what's going on?
Salute.
Anything going on? All right. So next week, we're talking about Gran Torino. After that, we have no clue what we're doing.
You wanted to do the football movie thing for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I might catch up by then.
That's the big consideration at this point.
I theoretically should have Clockwork Orange done by the end of the week.
Excellent.
What football movie do you want to do?
I don't know.
Any Given Sunday?
Remember the Titans is always a good film.
You know what? I think we should do as a football movie? MASH.
No.
A major plot point in the movie was football. It really was.
Yeah. Well, the last 15 minutes, yes.
Black Sunday.
Oh, yeah. We'll figure that out later. Before we get too deep into this,
Rock Me, All American.
Before we get too deep into
Rudy.
The comedic episode that we are going to be doing, something very serious that has happened to one of the people that I consider a Backseat Producer, T. Morris, who actually came up with the name Backseat Producer. I told him I was thinking of changing the name of Fanboy Smackdown, and he starts spitballing ideas. The second one he came up with was Backseat Producers, and it works. Last week, as we record this last week, T. Morris's wife died suddenly. T. is left to raise their 5-year-old daughter. You can hear about this in numerous places. You can read all about the details, and I don't want to bring anybody two down because we are recording about a funny movie. And, you know, the fact is that life does go on, and we do have to continue living it, and we do still have to find the joy in life, even when bad things happen. And in that respect, and with that said, there are two efforts going on. One is RememberNatalie.org, which is a site specifically for if you knew Natalie Morris. You can post your thoughts, your feelings. If you're a listener of the show, perhaps you live on the East Coast, you met her at one of the events T was at, something like that. If you know of her, you can go to that site and post some of your thoughts about her. It's helping her family know her from a different perspective and have her from that different perspective that not everybody knows. The other site is one that I am more directly involved with, and it's theboomeffect.org. This one is specifically for their daughter. This is a trust fund that has been started. We can't replace the fact that a little girl lost her mommy, but we can give that little girl some options for what she may want to do with her life that she might not otherwise have. So at this point, there's been, 17,000?
17,100 something.
Yeah, moments before we recorded, we saw that the number's up to 17,000. There is going to be a charity event the last weekend in February, and there's going to be auctions. There's going to be a webathon. It's going to be a whole big deal. You can find out more information at the website. We've bounced back and forth whether we're doing it Saturday or Sunday. So off the top of my head, I don't know what the exact date. It's either the 27th or the 28th. And I've been helping with it. I know that some of the things that have been donated are astounding. And we're actually asking for a lot more stuff. So by the time you listen to this, God only knows what's going to be available. They're posting what some of the auction lots are right on the website. The only one that I know for sure and that I can speak of positively is the last auction item of the event is going to be a signed copy of Man vs. Child, which is the video that T did of, it's a parody that he did of Man vs. Wild. Very funny. It's him and Sonic Boom, his daughter, and that's what the name the Boom Effect comes from, is he calls her Sonic Boom in the public space to protect her identity. And Man vs. Child is a very funny video. It features T and their daughter, and actually his wife does show up in a couple of brief moments of the video. Man vs. Child 1 and 2 are both, I think, going to be on this DVD. It's going to be signed by T and Sonic Boom. I want this DVD. There's no way that I'm going to be able to afford what it goes for at auction, because I just know that this one's probably going to be worth a mint to some people. All the money is going into a trust fund for Sonic Boom. So with that said, I know T would appreciate it if we talked about a funny movie now. So let's move on.
And we'll have links in the show notes.
Absolutely.
And at BackseatProducers.com.
Yeah, we will link the hell out of this, and we will talk about it more. And without fail, T will be back in the Backseat Producers. We were actually in talks to have him back on the day before Natalie died. So T will be back very soon. Anyway, moving on. We're talking about Airplane, gentlemen.
Yes.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Thank you.
The red zone is for immediate loading and unloading passengers.
Maybe you should there have that no, abortion.
There is no parking in the white zone.
I don't think I ever actually listened to all of the voiceover for that.
Oh, my God.
Until the last time I watched it. And it just killed me. You know, one of the Zuckers is the last guy that comes up to one of the religious people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And says, you know, would you like this flower?
Now, it was probably, and I remember this movie came out in
76. Help me out.
Was
here.
It that early? No, I know it was 79 or 80.
79. I am without.
Oh, 1980, excuse me.
1980, okay. I remember seeing this movie when I was like 11 or 12 on cable.
I remember it being in the theater and I wasn't allowed to go see it.
It wasn't that I wasn't allowed to go see it. It was that we lived on base and movies were months after the fact.
Yeah, see,
living,
I was like,
living on a military base. So, yeah, we lived on base, so it took forever for us to get movies.
Right.
And it probably just wasn't even on my radar.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it, though, when it was on HBO.
Yeah.
One of my first movies that I saw boobs in.
I think, you know what, I don't think I saw the uncut version until I was in my teens.
You know, and that's funny, because Julie mentioned, because I mentioned to her that it's one of the few, it's a PG movie that actually you see bare breasts.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't remember seeing that in that movie. And I said, have you ever seen that movie when it wasn't on
Channel 11?
Channel 11, yeah. Where the local independent channel. And she said, you know, now that you say that, I don't think I have.
We had a similar incident. Oh, God, this would have been probably 5 years ago. We went to visit a friend down at Fort Campbell whose husband was in Iraq at the time. And they have an extensive movie collection. And we were looking for something to watch with the kids. The kids were 10 and 11 at the time. Christopher was an infant. And we pulled out Stripes. Because my wife and I had
seen it. Oh,
yeah.
My.
And the simple fact is, I don't think my wife picked it out. And I don't think Sarah had ever seen Stripes.
When he pulls out the egg
Not on Channel 11. And we get to the scene where Lara Kett is in the commandant's office with the binoculars, looking into the women's showers, and it was awkward, but we kept going.
Yep.
But the kids got an education that weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what egg beaters are for.
Exactly. Well, you know, apparently Scott has strange feelings about what hot dog buns are for.
So I was probably about 11 or 12 years old when I first saw it. And I think it was probably the fourth or fifth time that I saw the movie before I realized that there was dialogue going on in those announcements. And that they were contradicting each other.
Yes.
And all I remembered at that point was that they were contradicting each other. And I thought that was funny. I really didn't. And when he says, "Oh, Betty, stop the red with the white zone bullshit."
You know, that's so funny.
Maybe you should have just had that abortion.
Now, see, I don't remember that part. I think by that point, I had already moved on and was watching the visual, because that's something that's completely going on in the background. Well, visually, there are funny things happening.
Well, and the chat room is talking about a comment from the Muppet movie about a running gag. The guy sitting in the taxi for the whole
movie.
Freaking movie.
You know what? I didn't realize until I was sitting here, the DVD was playing, the DVD finished, and the credits were rolling, and I just keep working away. And something's going on the screen, and I look up, and it's that guy
still
sitting in the taxi.
At LAX.
I'll give him another 30 minutes, but that's it. Then I'm leaving.
Yeah, but the question is, who was the guy sitting in the taxi?
Who was that?
Howard Jarvis. He was the guy who instigated the big property tax rollback in California in 1970s.
Oh, God.
Wow.
It's funny you should say that. I was listening to NPR yesterday when I was taking one of the kids to the orthodontist, and they were talking about California's whole debt problem right now, and they specifically mentioned him and rolling back the property tax thing back in the 70s as being responsible for what their current situation is. That's kind of funny.
This was probably my first memory of seeing a movie where someone was as flamboyantly gay
as the
guy in the air traffic controller room, and admittedly so. It was, they weren't trying to hide it. It wasn't a, what was his name?
The character was Johnny.
Yeah.
I can make a daredevil.
What's the story so far?
Well,
the Earth formed, and then the dinosaurs came, and they got
first the Earth cooled, then the dinosaurs came.
But
then came the Arabs, and they drove Mercedes Benzes. Oh, man. Okay, everybody, get your pictures.
Take your pictures off the wall.
All right. So let's try to go through some semblance of a normal episode here. All right, so let's break it down.
High-level review.
High-level thoughts. High-level thoughts on the movie.
There are no high-level thoughts in this movie.
Either you laugh or you don't.
I have a high-level thought about this movie. This movie spawned. This movie was the first in the line of scary movie. It was the
first real parody film of a film genre.
Yeah, right. It wasn't a genre so much as that sequence of airport movies.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole series of airport disaster movies.
Well, disaster movies. Airport, Tower and Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, Earthquake.
Well, Airport 77.
Airport 76, 77, 78.
Airport 1980, The Concorde.
Yeah.
Which, if you've seen that one, that was a piece of crap.
There was a whole series
of, I remember when that came out. Yeah, I don't remember seeing it. But,
it was bad.
Yeah.
But the genesis of this was before parody movies was a Kentucky Fried Movie.
Right.
Well, and that was done by the same guys.
Yeah, done by the same guys.
This actually spawned out of a sketch they wanted to do. For Kentucky Fried Movie.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, this was one of the alternate titles, isn't it Kentucky Fried Airplane or something like that?
Then they shortened it.
It's a spinoff of
The we'll get to the genesis of how this came along later, but which had a kind of a bizarre start.
I think though my high-level thought of it in comparison to the rash of parody movies that have come out recently, the scary movie, superhero movie, all of those in that grouping that the Wayans brothers have done.
That this movie was actually good.
This movie was good, but it also didn't rely as heavily on the immediate pop culture that those movies do.
I don't know. There's some timelessness to some of it.
Right. There is some stuff that's very definitely set right in the heart of the 80s.
Yes.
Or in that 79-80.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the jokes there, you know, the whole running backstory of Ted and the war and all that really had nothing to do with the movies that were out that year, which is everything to do with what the Wayans brothers do with their movies.
Yeah.
I mean, they take every movie that was released this year and cram it all into one 90-minute movie and make fun of it.
They're making fun of they're making more of a comment on the studio system itself than they are of anything else, of the fact that, you know, one studio puts out 300 and then all of a sudden we've got a rash of
of period pieces of men in loincloths slaying people in slow motion sepia tones.
Well, okay, good point, Stingray. Excellent point. Stingray points out that Mel Brooks really kind of pioneered the genre in 1972 Blazing Saddles.
I'm sure if we looked back, we could probably point to earlier parodies. Yeah, but
it's sort of explicit, and when I say explicit, I mean like sort of along the explicit tag, comedies that parody an entire genre.
Correct.
You know, I mean...
Yeah, because Blazing Saddles really poked at westerns, period.
And racism and in general.
But as far as the genre of film.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, yeah. But he was also... Yeah, I think he was also making social commentary about racism in that genre of film.
Yeah.
In general. I mean, there's a whole subtext to that.
Mm-hmm.
That is a movie... You want to talk about the jokes hold up? Even though there are some jokes in there that are time sensitive, time tied to a certain set of pop culture at that time, that movie holds up, and it holds up well, even watching it now. So
okay, so let's go into
sidetrack
acting. What do you think of the acting talent in this movie?
Robert Hayes.
I thought Robert Hayes and Julie Haggerty were okay.
They're okay.
They're okay.
And Peter Graves. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and
Ethel Merman.
Yeah.
Ethel
Merman's one scene in there was fantastic.
Her final movie scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ever.
He thinks he's Ethel Merman.
The supporting cast carried this film. Lloyd Bridges.
Oh.
Robert Stack. I mean...
Between Lloyd Bridges, Robert Stack...
You know that they
Leslie Nielsen. Those guys... Those guys rocked this movie
hard.
They
wanted George Kennedy.
For which role?
For the Robert Stack on the ground guy role.
Oh, wow.
Because that was the role that George Kennedy plays in Airport, Airport 77, Airport, 1980, The Quickening, and so on. And George Kennedy also had become a fixture in disaster movies, starting with The Towering Inferno.
Right.
And I think it was Universal was the studio he was with. Would not allow him because they considered Airport to still be a viable franchise at the time this was being made.
Even though 80 was the last one?
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, I think 80 was the last one.
They did not want him involved with this movie that was poking fun at their franchise.
Oh, yeah.
They forbid him to be in the movie.
And now, you almost think that now somebody in the studio system would say... It's a good idea to get him in there make fun of us. To make fun of us and keep us viable.
And especially
when a movie went in the direction that franchise
went. Well, and knowing that further down the line when the Naked Gun movies come out, George Kennedy works with him in the Naked Gun movies.
Yeah.
And it's hysterical.
Well, I think the one thing to consider with that decision, though, was, this is 1980. There were probably still a lot of holdovers from the old
Hollywood system. Absolutely.
Those are pretty much gone.
Well, 1980 is a very pivotal point in Hollywood.
Yeah.
As far as there's a lot of die-off that happens in the end of the 70s, both in talent and in management. And there's a lot of people that come into their own.
Well, there was the rise of the young guns and the end of the studio system about that time.
Right. Well, and I think that holdover would have kept somebody like George Kennedy from doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they came from a world where you controlled everything very tightly.
Oh, yeah.
And, actors didn't just go off on benders and have lost weekends that anybody knew about,
Or at least it wasn't approved by the studio.
Exactly. Exactly. If they needed to bump up that particular actor's rating, then they would.
Yeah, a little bad boy every now and then.
Yeah.
Something for the tabloids to get their teeth into.
Anything else about acting in this?
I mean, there are a number of cameos that are great. Barbara Billingsley. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar he's not a great actor, but the role he played in this movie was fantastic.
It was so funny the other day.
The best and the funniest thing I never noticed until this last time I watched it was after he passes out, when they're pulling him out of the chair, He's wearing the pilot.
Yeah, up here.
Up here and down below. He's wearing the Lakers shorts and knee pads and shoes. I about died because I never noticed that before.
It's kind of funny. On Twitter the other day, Sarah made a comment about the monster shouter in the stand, the book.
I've never read the book.
And nobody, she was asking if anybody else remembered him because she couldn't remember if it was something she'd come up with in her head or not. And the Monster Shouter is a character who's wandering through the remnants of New York City shouting that the monsters are coming. And in the miniseries they made in the 90s, the Monster Shouter is played by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so I said, hey, are you the Monster Shouter or are you the NBA's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
My dad says this.
My dad says
kid, you don't know how hard it is to carry
Lambeer and them up and down the court every night. Oh my god.
That's one of the jokes that dates the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
That but it's necessary. If you're going to have somebody famous at that time period, there you can't really get around that.
Yeah. No, it was really, if you were going to use a famous basketball player at that point, it was him or Julius Erving.
Yeah.
Or Pot. No, I don't think Magic Johnson was yet.
No.
I think he was a couple more years away.
No. Dr. J would have been.
Yeah,
Dr. J would have been.
Totally would have been. But anyhow, right. Moving on into, I guess we're into
the plot.
The plot. There are air quotes around that.
And you know what? This movie had more of a plot.
Yes, it
than
did.
Many parody movies do. It actually does have more of a plot. And character arcs. Holy shit. This movie has character arcs, which you just don't see. In parodies, you don't.
I know.
I'm serious. Yeah.
And they're so absurd.
They're absurd, but they're legitimate character arcs, and that's what's crazy.
Over Macho Grande?
I'll never be over Macho Grande.
Yes, we're off to invade Daiquiri.
You know, if I didn't think your wife would yell at me, I'd have a drinking problem right now.
That didn't give up whiskey.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that with bourbon, though.
No, no.
That stings.
Even with the eye protection I have in place now.
That stings.
No. Oh, my God. I guess I picked the wrong day to stop drinking whiskey.
Oh, man.
Or start.
So I mentioned this before we started recording. I was priming the pump for recording this and just getting people talking about it by dropping the Shirley. Surely we're not talking about Airplane tonight on Twitter and things like that. Well, when I did that, I had a lot of people respond back to me with one-liners from the movie. Chris Hussey responds back to me with, I picked the wrong week to, which one did he? Stop Sniffing Glue.
Stop Sniffing Glue, yeah.
He did Stop
That's
Sniffing
the
Glue.
The husband?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he responds back to me with that. 5 minutes later, I get this response back, a retweet of his tweet from somebody called Wrong Week, at Wrong Week. So I'm like, what's this all about? So I follow the link back. This is somebody who's set up a retweet account robot that all it does is it finds people who use the phrase, I picked the wrong week to ... and then retweets it. That's all they do. It's hilarious.
Things like this that reinforce my belief that the internet is an amazing and awesome thing.
It's an amazing and terrible thing.
And the people have way too much time on their hands.
Yes.
And I'm perfectly okay with that. As one of those people who has way too much time on
their
hands.
I stopped this short of following that account. I have followed crazier accounts. I follow Shamu, by the way. Shamu, we were talking earlier about celebrities to follow. Shamu is actually hilarious.
Let me tell you.
By the way.
All killer whales are named Kevin.
Except Shamu.
No, they're named Kevin.
Oh, yeah?
I'm just going to tell you that right now. They're all named Kevin.
Oh, really?
It's a long story.
Okay.
All right, then.
All right. Mm-hmm. Moving on.
Read a book by Christopher Moore called Fluke, or I Know Why the Winged Whale Sings.
I've heard of this book. I have not read it.
If you've not read Christopher Moore and his entire oeuvre, you should. It will make you laugh.
You just dropped the word oeuvre.
Oh, damn right.
Adam would be looking up that. What does that mean? I don't know what that is.
I have nothing to bring to this conversation.
All right.
Yeah, I'm using too big of words to be Adam. Damn it.
Okay. So the plot, as it stands. I can't think of Julie Haggerty's character name now.
Oh, crap.
What the hell's her name?
Quick, to the iPhone. Daryl.
Guys, come on.
Vamp, vamp, vamp.
All right. So
stretch.
All right. So Ted Stryker.
Stryker.
Wham! All right.
Elaine.
Thank you. All right.
Oh God.
Elaine and Ted have had difficulties, shall we say?
She's leaving.
She has left. Ted has followed her to the airport. Ted is a cab driver. He gets to the airport. Somebody jumps into his cab. He starts the meter and runs in after her.
And if you ever tried to get a cab in L.A., you understand why that guy sat in that cab for 6 hours.
Yeah. So
you might want to back up just a bit. Why Ted and Elaine are having problems.
I don't think we find that out.
Well, we do. Because she says, as they get together there, she can't live with a man who's stuck in the past.
Right.
That's right.
Which actually, there is hilarious joke that I never caught until watching it this time that I'll get to. So he chases her down in the airport. They have this confrontation. And she says, look, we can't do this. You're stuck in the past.
I'm moving on.
I've got to go. I've got to go to work. She's an airline stewardess.
And she even tells him at the end of the conversation, I'm staying in Chicago.
Right.
When I get to Chicago, I'm finding an apartment. I'm staying there.
I'm going to stay there. Right. So Ted does what any, you know,
insane stalker boyfriend would do.
And gets a ticket to Chicago.
Insane, mentally unhinged veteran stalker boyfriend.
It just happens to be on the exact same flight that Elaine's working on.
In fact, he insures it by asking if she's on that flight.
Right. Which is funny because it's really funny because there's so much that would happen that in this movie that could never happen nowadays. It's just hilarious.
Ted would have been picked up by the TSA long before he ever got on the plane.
They even did the hijack joke.
Yeah.
Bob, is that Jack over there? I don't know. Why don't you say hello to him? Hi, Jack! Boom. All right, so he gets on the plane, and now there are many jokes going
just
on,
flying around.
Just flying around between the Hare Krishnas.
Yeah.
The
preparations that are going on the plane, the guy on the high lift that's got the hood up on the front end of the plane.
Washing the windows.
Checking the oil.
Then falls off.
A guy comes up to the window on the captain's side with the charge plate thing and Captain Over. Captain Clarence Over, in fact.
Roger.
What's the vector, Victor?
This is Roger. We have your clearance, Clarence. What's our vector, Victor?
Now, it wasn't until Airplane 2 where they did all the introductions and it was Over and Unger and he was Over Unger and he was Under Dunn.
Yes, exactly.
And that was in Airplane 2.
Yeah, Over Unger and Dunn were in
and that's Airplane 2. That was another good sequence, but that was Airplane 2. Yeah, so no, we'll move on.
Yeah. Whole other episode, Tony.
Completely different. That's something completely different. It's not important right now. All right, so we get on the airplane, more comedy. We meet some of the wacky passengers, which is great because these passengers are basically the cookie cutter representations of all the different variety of characters you'll see in every disaster movie. You get this whole weird mix of characters that you're introduced to.
Me, I am a disaster movie junkie.
Yeah,
I mean, you roll up a disaster movie. And I'm sitting up in front of the theater with my sleeve rolled up and a piece of tubing wrapped around my vein.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, have you seen Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs yet?
No.
That is a disaster movie parody.
Right on.
So
I'm there.
So there's something for
you. I haven't watched 2012 yet. It came at a time where I couldn't go out to the theater to see it, but.
But there you go.
Towering Inferno is one of those movies that I own, and I watch probably once a year. Like late at night by myself.
Cloudy with a Chance of
Nobody else in my family.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Me.
You and Christopher, You shall enjoy it.
Yes.
I promise. I took Holden to see it. It was fantastic. So, but, moving on.
But I know these characters.
Yes. There's this weird mix of characters that you can really only find in a disaster movie.
You have the black character.
All brought together by fate.
You have the black character. You have the child. You have the child there without their parent. You have...
The sick child. The doctor.
Who must make their destination.
You have the doctor. You have the nun. You have the... elderly couple, you have, you know, the couple that are having trouble and are brought back together by the disaster. I mean, it's all there.
Put
you
him on
Shelley Winters.
Another joke that we missed was when in the airport the pilot comes in and he gets a call over the intercom. Pick up the red phone, and he picks up the white phone. He picks it up. Hello? I said the red phone. He's gonna goes to the red phone. He's talking. We've got so-and-so on the line from the Mayo Clinic. Okay. Oh. And he's talking to this guy about the girl who's on the plane. The whole time, we've got a heart transplant for her. The heart is bouncing around the desk.
But then there's...
lively
there's,
one.
Then somebody else goes, we've got another call for you. It's so-and-so Ham on the line.
Oh, Mr. Ham. All right.
Give me the ham.
Give me the ham. Hold the mayo.
Yeah, this was
like, they just wow. That is a long way to go for a joke. That was hilarious.
The thing is, it's Peter freaking Graves.
Yeah.
Okay? It's Mr. Phelps.
The thing is, they did amazing casting with picking people who were traditionally very serious.
Yeah, Leslie Nielsen was a serious actor.
Yeah.
We're talking about a movie that changed his entire career.
Absolutely.
But Peter Graves' comedic timing was brilliant.
Yes. All right. So now we're on the airplane. We've taken off, and the meal is served, as is typical in a...
Well, and there's some other things. I mean, Elaine realizes that Ted's on the flight.
Yeah, we do have that. And Ted proceeds to...
tell his bore story. Whoever
is sitting next to him
to
the point of suicide on multiple occasions.
Including, because I have to do this because Adam's not here.
That's true.
James Hong, who was in Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yep. And he commits... Does he...
Smooker, yeah
he's about ready to.
He's a Japanese officer.
The one old lady that he's talking to, he turns around and you see her ankles dangling
from the ceiling.
And then at the very end, talk about a movie with no racial sensitivity. There's the guy with the turban sitting next to him who has doused himself.
Yes.
Lighter fluid.
And is sitting there trying to light the lighter. No, he's trying to light a match.
Yeah.
And he gets called away and you see the relief on his face. Oh God, I don't have to kill myself.
But we learn through a series of flashbacks that Ted and Elaine met during the war.
The war, which is some weird blend of like World War II and
Korea.
Yeah.
And Vietnam.
Yeah, it's this weird blend.
Yeah.
It seems to be mostly World War II, but not actually ever possible that it could have been World War II. So it's kind of the montage of
planes that uses a mixture of sorts of different ones.
Including like the Wright Flyer at one point, I think, too.
Yeah.
But they met in a club.
Where he did the dance sequence.
Well, this is the other killer part. Notice that when he says he's in the Air Force, but when he's sitting at the bar, he's wearing
Navy white
aviators.
And there were the fighting Girl Scouts.
Yeah. Yep.
Which were entertaining. And then the disco music starts, and this rough bar turns into a disco nightclub.
Right.
And there's the obligatory Saturday Night Fever dance sequence, which is just...
Well, it was meant to be.
I know.
It was meant to be.
I know.
And at the time, that was a timely parody.
Yeah.
That was one of the timely parodies.
Oh, yeah. And then...
And thank God that Saturday Night Live has held up...
Saturday Night Fever.
Or Saturday Night Fever, yeah. Sorry. Saturday Night Fever has held up such that people could still understand the parody of it.
Well, and then there was the sequence of them doing the From Here to Eternity.
Rolling around
on the beach. Surf.
Getting covered in sea foam and kelp and everything else.
And then...
Their time in the Peace Corps.
Their time in the Peace Corps.
I taught them simple game skills.
The Peace Corps was after.
The Peace Corps was after
because it's his injury. Mm-hmm. He gets injured on the whole From Here to Eternity thing. I'm shipping out.
Oh, by the way, I'm shipping out tomorrow.
Yeah. I can't tell you where I'm
going. Where are you going? Oh, we're going to fly in low. We're going to do this. When are you leaving? That's top secret. I can't tell you that. It's classified information.
But we find out through the narrative that something went wrong.
No, the chat room is correct. Unfortunately, Saturday Night Live has not held up as well.
Contrary to anything that Luke Meyer might try and tell you on another podcast, Saturday Night Live has not held up.
I can say one thing for certain about Saturday Night Live that I've learned. Saturday Night Live is best watched through a lens about 5 to 10 years after it originally aired. It's amazing the nostalgia that you can watch that with and appreciate older skits. You can appreciate the skits more after about 5 or 10 years than you can when they're live aired.
I grew up in a period of time when the best part of Saturday Night Live was Weekend Update.
Mm-hmm.
When it was being done by Dennis Miller.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I like
and
that.
And those pieces were perfect right then. Since then, there has not been a decent Weekend Update team since Dennis Miller. I don't care what anyone tries to tell me. Moving on. So,
just to let you know, no, we will never do Dan Xanadu. I mean, I would pull my ears. Pull my ears out.
God, I saw that in the theater.
Xanadu.
That's one of those movies that I look back now and realize the only reason why I saw it in the theater is because my dad was in the closet. That's the only reason why I saw that in the theater.
Julie tells a funny story that I will go ahead and relate because she's asleep. In college, she had a roommate who worked for a video store. And after she left for the night, she was able to take videos home to watch and then could bring back the next day. No big deal. We liked this when we were younger. Let's watch Xanadu.
Yeah.
That was a night of disappointment.
Yes.
I will still hold that the soundtrack is pretty damn good, though.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the ELO stuff. The ELO stuff is always good. I've got love for ELO. Mm-hmm. Tying it back to the beginning, so does T.
Prog rock.
Anyway.
Moving on.
So we're at the point where Ted has shipped out and his disaster.
A lot of backstory, yeah.
We got a lot of backstory.
Something happened over Macho Grande.
Something.
And there he ends up in the hospital.
Yes.
And we learn that everyone but one other person died.
Right.
And then while he's at the hospital, that other person dies.
George Zip.
It's George Zip, that's right.
Well, no, there was one other guy. Well, no, it was the Ethel Merman.
That was just another guy.
Yeah. That was just another guy who was there.
Guy in the war.
Yeah. What's wrong with him? He thinks he's Ethel Merman. Ethel Merman jumps out and performs a little number and jumps right back into bed.
So all he's right. left with the incredible guilt that he killed everyone in his flight.
That he couldn't save them over Macho Grande.
Grande.
Will you ever be over Macho Grande?
I don't think I'll ever be over Macho Grande.
And that is what is eating his soul.
And it's giving him his drinking problem.
His drinking problem, yes.
Yes, he can't get it into his mouth.
Yep.
So, in the present, we're being served a meal on the plane.
Beef or fish.
And one of the flubs that I noticed people have commented on is FAA regulations actually forbid pilot and co-pilot from eating the same meal.
Yeah.
Probably because of this movie. I'm going to choose to believe that.
Well, over airport, because that's where they brought that plot.
So, a large number of the passengers, including the whole flight crew, eat fish. Apparently the fish is bad.
The fish is very bad.
And the fish lays them low, not only to the point that it lays them low, but later we discover that if we don't get them to a hospital soon, they will die. Everyone will die. The only way I can save them is by getting them to a hospital within the next 2 hours or something like
and
that.
And by a freak weather system, the entire western United States west of Chicago is covered in fog.
Yes.
And of course, the only pilot available is
Ted.
Stryker.
Stryker. We also have a doctor on board who's able to help diagnose some of the problems with the patient, with the sick people, and that's Mr. Leslie Nielsen.
Yes.
And I believe one of his first comedic roles.
I believe it is his first comedic role.
I believe it is. And just absolutely outstanding. Just plays it completely straight.
So dead.
And his timing is just killer.
He's amazing.
He has some of the best lines.
I just want you all to know that we're all behind you. We're all thinking of you. How many times does he come in and do that whole speech?
I don't know.
Like five times.
All right, so
and then on the ground, we kind of neglected.
Yeah, we've got the ground crew they've been notified.
Our crack that there's a team on the ground.
They've been notified that there's a problem.
Led by Lloyd Bridges.
Lloyd Bridges, who
is the
is incredible.
Who has picked the wrong day to quit everything.
The wrong week to
apparently
stop sniffing glue.
Quite a substance abuse problem up until today.
Stop drinking. Stop doing amphetamines. Yeah.
Yes, he's the head of the airline, or he's the
head of the air traffic control.
And they have to call in the next best pilot, which is our Robert Stack.
Who happens to be the man who was in command?
Another sequence that goes on the ground, which speaks to, I think, how smart the writers believed their audience was, because I didn't get the joke immediately. It took me multiple viewings to get the joke. They bring all the reporters in to tell them what's going on.
Yes,
two things happen that are hilarious. Okay, guys, now we need to get some pictures. They all run over, grab pictures off the wall, and take off. But then what happens is there's a montage of newspaper headlines.
Yeah, spinning newspaper headlines.
Then there's the TV.
When there's no way that they could have gotten newspapers printed in the couple of hours that this thing's in the air.
Well,
and that's the funny part.
Too.
Well, the news reports, I mean, well, news reports can happen.
One of them spin in.
Yeah.
Like the newspaper.
Yeah. But, I mean, and that news reports are one thing.
Yeah.
But when they're talking full printed headline, you know, top headline articles about this stuff, it's like, that couldn't happen.
Well, and there's
time
the news
frame?
Reports from around the world.
Right.
There's the Japanese one. There's the one in Africa who's on the
And behind them,
drums.
They each got the picture of the plane going down
in flames.
In its own particular way, too.
I believe they do a similar sequence in Airplane 2 also.
Oh, yeah.
Where and I remember that one because they show them all and they say it's going to be disastrous, and then they show every one of them screaming.
Yes.
They're just screaming from anchor to anchor.
Well, and also on the ground we have Lloyd Bridges' assistant, Johnny.
Johnny is fabulous.
Who is an amazing, amazing...
vessel of non-sequiturs.
Power behind the throne. If we want to put it that way. He's keeping his end up, as it were.
I see what you did there.
Oh, hi.
It was played by the incredible Steven Stucker.
Who I believe is actually no longer with us. I think...
That's a shame.
I think he actually... Someone in the chat room fact-checked this. I think he was part of the group of people we lost in the 80s to AIDS.
That sucks.
I think. Either him. I know we lost the one guy from 1941 with the glasses that had the really funny voice that was in Grease.
You know, 1941 is on Encore a lot right now.
Oh, it's a great movie.
And it's on Encore on Demand. I need to watch that again. It's been a long time since I've watched it.
I watched it on Encore like a week ago.
I need to watch that again. It's been a while. Anyway.
Well, one thing also we know is the last spinning paper was not about anything, but it was about the boy trapped in a refrigerator eats his own foot.
But it was a National Enquirer or something, yeah.
The picture of the kid on that is the kid of one of the producers.
Right.
Really?
They didn't tell him what they were going to use his picture for.
That's
he
awesome.
Found out of it later when
That's
he was
hilarious.
Watching the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was a poor kid.
All right. So, and they've also brought in... was it Robert Stack?
Robert Stack.
This is where we bring in Robert Stack's character.
Robert Stack.
Who we find out has some experience
with
Ted Stryker.
He was his commanding officer during the war.
Yeah. leading to some hilarity when Ted's in the cockpit.
When they bring him in, they don't tell Stack until he's at the airport.
Right.
Who's up there.
Exactly.
You better have somebody who's rock solid up there, who's ready to...
who's ready to go.
Thing. And who's up there? Ted Stryker.
Oh, they're all doomed.
I can't do this.
Hang it up.
With the mic open.
Hang it up. Everybody go home. It's done.
With the mic on the radio open.
All right.
And I think this was also, at this point, we've been introduced to Otto.
Otto has already come and gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
They cleaned up the cockpit. They activated Otto.
Otto the Autopilot.
Which is also the name of the Autopilot in WALL-E.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Would not be surprised if there was some connection there.
That's... All right, so all the players are in place. We have our disaster imminent, and...
Sounds almost Shakespearean.
It does. This movie could have been written by Shakespeare. Or not.
Or not.
So, really, you come to the resolution of Ted and Elaine are trying to work out their differences. One of the funniest scenes that I only really got, I caught the joke only with this most recent watching. Elaine is describing how wonderful their past was, how great it was. Remember all the old times. Remember how great it was. Ted, you just have to stop living in the past. That's our problem. You living in the past. I just about pissed my pants because I realized...
You know what it is? The problem between them is the same problem as between the two people on the announce system at the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're both contradicting each other.
Yep.
And neither one is making any damn sense.
They're not listening to each other.
Exactly.
So it's a
relationship movie.
It is a relationship movie. This is a date film.
This is a date movie. It's a chick flick.
This is a chick flick. I'm just saying. Because you know what? If this were a guy movie, they would not have done that. She would not have complained about it being his problem.
No.
There would have been more shit blowing up if this is a guy movie.
Yeah. They would all have died.
More people would have
died. And Alan Rickman would have been there.
He would have.
Yeah.
Euro trash and all.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been fantastic.
Ho, ho, ho.
All right, so, we can point out some of the other fun parts of the movie. Really...
At the end of the plot here, they make the decision to talk them in.
Right.
They talk them in, they land, everybody lives. Yay.
Yay.
Ted
bringing the plane in, just... Sweat just pouring off of him. Yeah, and ridiculous amounts of...
Well, that's this whole thing. Just one sight gag after another.
Right, through the whole ending sequence.
And Elaine and Ted reconcile in the very end. And
Everyone is saved.
Yes.
And then the plane fires back up.
And Otto's
they look up. Otto looks over. A girlfriend inflates next to him. He gives the thumbs up and they spin the plane around with no landing gear and take off.
Yep, that's right.
All right.
So one thing just to get the opening sequence, the very beginning of the movie is a Jaws.
Oh, right. It's a play on Jaws.
Yeah. That was done with spun cotton and
I saw that.
A plastic tail.
Plastic tail from a toy
Airplane
and a wire track.
That is not a surprise.
Yeah.
One sequence we did not talk about during the recording that we talked about before we started recording was the little girl, the sick little girl. Played by, if anybody remembers Love Boat, played by the captain's daughter on Love Boat.
Yep.
She played the sick little girl because we talked about the sick little girl.
Yeah,
but
we mentioned her archetype.
But she's there with.
She needs a heart transplant. She has to remain on her back.
With no excitement.
So, and she's there with her
mother.
With her mother, and one of the nuns on the plane comes up and says, "Oh, or no,
no. The nun has a guitar.
The stewardess goes to the nun and says, I see you have a guitar. Can I borrow it? There's a sick little girl up there. I'd like to play her some music." So she gets up there. Probably the funniest sight sequence in the movie.
And the little girl has an IV hung.
Oh, my God. She's got this IV hung. And she starts the song, and everybody's happy and kind of mellow. And they kick up the song a little bit, and she whips that guitar around the neck of it, rips the IV right out of the little girl's arm.
And everybody on the plane is snapping their fingers,
dancing and having a great time.
She rips the IV out of her arm, and this kid, who it was a child.
She had to have been less than 10 to 12.
Yeah.
Bugs it up so well.
Bugs it up so well. I told Sarah when I was watching it. I'm watching it last week. I'm like, the kid deserves an Academy.
Sucks
award.
Her cheeks in. Starts flailing around like an epileptic. It's hilarious.
And the first time it pulls, they pull it out of her arm. Her mother doesn't even notice. Her mother's right. So into the song, and the kid gets it back in.
Mm-hmm. And then they do
and
it again.
Knock it out again. And this time, her mother notices.
Yeah.
But the best part of it, I think, is the fact that she gets it back in by herself, and the look of relief on her face just as the chorus comes around again, and she rips it out of her arm.
All right. So another notable sequence that we've missed were the jive talking guys.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah, all through the movie, it's just jive, 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 and then, like, you're trying to follow along what they're saying.
And it's subtitled.
It's subtitled. The subtitles are great.
Yes.
And because they're talking ridiculous jive.
Yes, they are.
And they're talking about the most mundane and boring things. It's hilarious. And what's funny is the subtitles are actually wrong at one point.
Yeah.
Because his order, he orders steak, and he says and Java.
Yeah.
But the subtitle never says the coffee.
Yeah.
The subtitle never picks that part up.
Lamb down, smack him, yak him. Cold got to be. I used to be a
jump don't want help, jump bang on get him.
That used to be a greeting between a manager of mine and I. Like, phone greeting. It was hysterical. I take a rap.
So at one point the stewardess needs to talk to the jive gentleman, and she's not quite getting what they're saying to her. June Cleaver herself, Barbara Billingsley, comes up. Excuse me, stewardess, I speak jive. And then jive.
I don't know anything anyhow.
Well, she tries to translate in for the trouble. She's getting a lot of flack.
I believe.
Yeah, it might be. I believe it is. Jive ass and bomb. Don't know nothing about anything anyhow. Chum don't want help. Chum ain't gonna get help. Oh, fantastic! They pulled no punches.
Well, and the other one that I love is the little boy who's straight up macking on this girl who's flying by herself.
Would you like some coffee? Yes, I'll take it black. Like I like my men.
Strong and black.
Strong and black. Like I like my men. And the dejected look on that boy's face is hilarious.
And then there's
the sequence when the Stryker's Robert Stack's character
mm-hmm.
comes into the airport
mm-hmm.
and he's walking past all of the religious people handing him stuff and just beating the holy shit out of him.
Just laying people out.
Throwing people around, yep. Knocking them down.
There's also a series
Did
of
you
shots
notice?
Of a woman putting her makeup on.
Oh, yeah.
Every time that the plane makes an attitude adjustment, she's dragging a lipstick across her face.
When they do that sequence of the religious people, one of the people that comes up to him is a Scientologist.
That's awesome.
So that... And this is one of the few PG-13 movies that I can name. PG movies. This is the PG movie that I can name off the top of my head that has bare breasts in it. I know there are others, but mm-hmm. this is the one I can name off the top of my head.
Yep.
And it's during the sequence when they inadvertently announce to the passengers that there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because they say, and by the way, is there anybody that knows how to fly a plane on board?
And there's chaos.
The chaos scene.
And all of a sudden, dancing across the front row of the plane.
No, she just walks.
Yeah.
She just runs out, and shakes her chest, and then runs off.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. How this movie? There's no way. Even with that cut out, there's no way this movie could have been rated anything less than PG-13.
Yeah.
Just some of the jokes they make are just so...
Well, there's all the drug humor. I mean...
You
know, all the stuff about...
All the pedophilia.
Yeah.
We didn't even touch on
best
that.
Scene in the movie. sequence of scenes in the movie. Timmy goes up to the cockpit.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Like, so, Timmy.
Gladiator meter movies?
You ever been inside a Turkish prison?
You ever been inside a Turkish prison?
Do you like Gladiator movies?
Was there one more? I thought there was one.
There
more.
Was one about the YMCA. Do you like taking showers at the YMCA?
Oh, yeah.
The blow.
The Otto jokes, which he has to reinflate Otto.
Which he has to reinflate Otto when Otto comes loose out of the seat.
Yes.
When she reinflates Otto, Otto reinflates with a big grin on his face.
Well, then when he comes out of the seat at one point and is floating around the cockpit, he ends up wrapped around her from behind.
Yeah.
And bouncing, and there's motion. The other thing I love about this, there's just the subtle things, like the fact that the plane was a stick shift.
Yeah.
Drop it in the gear. Brilliant.
And all the time that they're flying, of course, it's a jet, but it has
props. All the noises are always props.
Yeah. That was deliberate, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it was deliberate, but it was also a like in-your-face reference.
Because they wanted it to be a prop plane. Yeah. They wanted the plane to be a prop plane, but the studio
said it'd be a jet.
It needs to be a jet.
Yeah.
One of the other jokes that was just another one of those twisting it right in your face. They're coming around. The stewardess coming around asking for drink orders. She goes with the one old one. Can I get you a drink? She says, "Oh no, I don't drink anything." She turns around, walks away. She goes and snorts a line.
Yeah, she doesn't like Coke. Yeah, and then there's another one where they pull, which the guy pulls out. It's not a flask. It's a pint of liquor. With a leather, they used to be able to get these leather wrappers that you put around it that made it look like a flask, and it just pulls it out. This old woman pulls out this big pint of whatever it is and starts taking slugs right out of the bottle. One of the other sequences that just kills me.
when the woman's freaking out because her husband, well, there's...
Okay, he never takes coffee after dinner at home.
Yeah. He never vomits at home. The one woman's freaking out. The stewardess walks up. You need to calm down. And the nun walks up, smacks her. They get progressively worse and worse. What I love is when they pan back from that and kind of go down the crowd. There's somebody holding a gun, a baseball bat, like an axe.
I say that part of the movie is just one visual and that either bad pun. Visual joke or something, just one right after the other. Just,
well, yeah, because when we were given the plot description, we just got to that middle point and said comedy ensues because that's all it was. I mean, there was just this huge. There was a plot with a little bit of backstory and a little bit of story running in the present that was there to break up the comedy, and it did it. They both did a really good job of offsetting each other.
Yeah.
Because it did have a story that you could kind of follow.
And the nice thing about it, I also think, was that most of the running gags were not visual gags. Most of the running gags were script.
Yeah.
Were actual dialogue. Like the whole "Shirley, you don't mean that." The whole sequence where Leslie Nielsen keeps coming into the cockpit and giving the same speech.
Right.
We're all behind you. We're all thinking of you.
The when somebody says something and the other person questions one word of what they said and the person follows it up with the description of what that one thing is.
Yes. But that's not important.
But that's not important right now.
You know, that whole thing and Johnny and his
total his
tangents.
Just complete tangents. That and comments like, "Oh, if that happens, the shit will really hit the fan." And literally, there's a shot of poo being thrown at a fan.
Yep.
You know, that's the stuff that makes it hysterical. And it speaks to everybody's inner 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Got anything else?
Just maybe the genesis of how this movie started.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that...
Yeah, according to some of the references I read there, they were looking for a movie to pair... Well, they were looking for movie commercials to parody. And they... We're watching these late night TV commercials.
Okay.
And they just set up a video camera to record them, and they went off to bed. Well, the next morning when they were reviewing the film, the camera caught the movie that was playing. It was called The Zero Hour. And they watched The Zero Hour, and which is all the dialogue of Zero Hour is in this movie. And it's the same story. And they said, "Well, why do we just parody why are we parodying commercials? This is parody this whole movie." So they took the Zero Hour, all the dialogue, all the plot settings and everything, and they just wrote all the comedy of a Kentucky Fried Movie into it. Because they were going to plan on originally doing another Kentucky Fried movie, but they were just going to sit there and just do the brief skits commercials.
And they had wanted to do, in the original Kentucky Fried movie, a segment about a plane disaster. And it got cut from the movie. Because
right. Well, we ended up with A Fistful of Yen.
Right.
Which is the parody of all the Kung Fu movies.
Right. Because that was cheaper to make than an airplane disaster parody. The other thing that I remember about this movie, and I believe this was the way in the trailer for the movie, but I know it wasn't all the promotional stuff you used to see like on Saturday movies and stuff like that, was when they would run the commercial promo for it, they would include the shot of the 747 coming through the window into the terminal.
Right.
But it would imply, through the sequencing of it,
that happened
at the climax of the movie.
When that really happens at the beginning of the movie.
That happens at the beginning of the movie and has nothing to do with the story.
Yeah. Yeah, where's that stuff? Oh, it's over there.
It's over there.
Yeah, I remember that. And that was like on the little ads that HBO would even play. Yeah. When they were, talking about the movies they had coming up that month or whatever.
And so we can flog this horse just one more time. I'm going to bring up the bestiality joke in the movie.
Of course.
When they call Lloyd Bridges' wife.
Oh, yeah.
And she's in bed with a horse.
You can let yourself out the back. Okay, trivia question. What was the horse's name?
I don't remember.
It's in the credits.
Really?
Yes.
What was it?
Misty.
Wow, so it was a lesbian affair with a horse.
Nice.
That's brilliant. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to think there. Now, are they parodying The Godfather, or were they making some other weird joke here?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they were going for.
Where that came from. I don't think it had anything to do with The Godfather. I think it just...
It was just bizarre. It was it was nonsensical. And it was
into the movie. There was no joke.
There was no joke at that point.
Yeah. At that point, we were putting stuff into the movie for shock value, I think.
Well, and if I'm remembering right, there really wasn't a joke at that point. They were calling
his
wife.
She's having a phone call.
Yeah, there was just a phone call. And there was nothing comedic in the information that they were... No. That it was necessary information because... They were telling her that she needed to come down to the airport because her husband was the pilot who collapsed.
Stingray has the right of it. Her in a bed with a guy wouldn't be funny. Her in bed with a horse, that's funny.
That is funny. Yeah, absolutely. There's no joke to it. Until you see it. And there wouldn't have been a joke to it even if it would have been another woman or a midget or... clowns. I mean, it would have been, but when it's a horse, it's like, what?
Clowns wouldn't have been funny.
Clowns.
Don't like clowns.
I have a video to show. Not afraid of clowns.
Don't like clowns.
I have a video to show you.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
I know. Everybody knows this. I have a video to show you. I had a friend that when he found out I didn't like clowns, I'm not afraid of clowns, I just don't like them.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like clowns. Let me explain to you. If there was clown porn on the internet, I have seen it. I stopped opening emails from him at one point because every single email about whatever it was about would include some sort of clown porn at some point in it.
WebSoup has played a couple of clown videos.
And those people that tell you that there's no possible way you can make vagina unappealing to a heterosexual man, put it in clown white and give it a clown nose. Let me tell you, it's unappealing.
Twisted.
Vaginas are always serious.
Serious business, I'm telling you right now.
If anything, if there's been anything that my doctor, Dr. Luke Meyer, has taught me is that vaginas are always serious.
Dr. Luke Meyer. Because we have to call him doctor.
Penises are always funny.
Yes.
Vaginas are always serious.
No, he didn't teach us that part.
No.
Adam taught us that part.
We knew that. Yeah, Adam did teach us that. But Dr. Meyer, he's the one that taught us that vaginas are always serious.
Well, and has had it backed up by my wife, Sarah. Sarah has confirmed that vaginas are always serious business.
Truth. We should wake her up and ask her that again.
And why don't you get right on that? Go ahead.
That's all right. I'll tweet her and see if she responds.
Yeah.
If not, I'll just assume that we are correct.
Yeah,
we'll go with that.
Go right ahead.
We'll go with that.
Go right ahead. You think you're safe here in a different state. Go right ahead.
I'll just line the bridges with tequila. She'll end up in a different state.
That's right. Drunk, naked, different state. It's the truth.
All right.
All right. I think that pretty much wraps up here today.
Rich, you are a smart, smart man. That's all I'm saying.
All right. So, Airplane. It was a movie.
It was awesome.
It was funny.
It was very funny.
And it's worth multiple viewings. Absolutely. It really is. And if you haven't seen it a while, watch it again, because like me, there's probably things you missed. I was amazed.
Any comedy like that that you remember from your childhood or from your teen years.
Well, and there's jokes that maturity has given me.
Revisit them,
right?
Because I mean, like Blazing Saddles, there was stuff that I got the last time I watched it that I didn't get the first time,
right?
You know, and those movies that you remember from Saturday and Sunday afternoon at the movies on the local independent channel.
Well, and especially because...
Go hunt them down on Netflix.
Because odds are there were sequences that were cut out of them that you missed that were probably racier. There's probably language that was cut out.
Funny story.
Like
Midway. The movie Midway.
Uh-huh.
Charlton Heston, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
If you get the DVD of that,
mm-hmm.
it's actually more cut up than what was on Saturday afternoons.
Really?
Yeah. There are entire scenes and entire storylines that are cut out of the DVD because the DVD release is a very early DVD release. It's before dual layer.
Oh, so they had to cut it for the
length.
And so I don't think there's been a release done with the full film. And that's a great movie. One of the last great World War II movies.
There are a couple of movies.
In Cinceround.
Before the modern war movie era.
There are a couple of movies that they actually have added sequences to when they were played on like your local independent channels mm-hmm. because of time.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have enough.
Yeah.
So they actually went back and added in deleted sequences.
Because
there was stuff that they had to cut. But they had to replace it to still keep
a
whole
set of scenes in Wrath of Khan that were added in for a couple of network airings on ABC
back
in the 80s. One of which is one of my favorite scenes in the Star Trek movies. It's after they come back from the Genesis planet with the cave.
Right.
And all of the turbolifts are out, so they're climbing up through the tubes. And you see, it's an overhead shot of a hatch, and the hatch pops open, and Kirk climbs out. And he says, "Spock, that man back there, he's my son." And Spock comes climbing out. One word. Fascinating. And right beyond, just right behind him as they walk up. And it's just the timing of the whole thing. It's perfect.
Nice.
And it's just, it's a good classic Kirk Spock scene that you mm-hmm. get right before we all know what's coming, which is Spock's going to die.
Yeah.
And it reminds you of
the friendship
mm-hmm. and the connection that the two of them have. So.
Yeah, I was going to mention, Roshan mentions it here, the Mallrats. The television edit of Mallrats has more stuff in it than the theatrical edit did.
Well, yeah, that's because that movie has...
Well, plus, the sound edit on that movie is hilarious because Jay does not sound like Jay in any of the parts that they had to edit for language.
Yeah, the movie... itself, there's a lot of... That movie is unique in that it has probably the most amount of deleted scenes on the DVD.
Yeah.
Of any movie.
And there's like...
there was a whole opening sequence that mm-hmm. he filmed and explained...
Like a party sequence.
Yeah, it's this big party thing that explains where all the characters are at the beginning of the movie.
Uh-huh.
As far as the movie...
Why they are where they're at.
Why the father hates T.S. and the whole nine yards... That was cut from the movie at the studio's request.
But you know what? I watched that sequence and I thought this was the right decision.
Yeah,
because it was a prologue.
Mm-hmm.
It was a completely unnecessary prologue.
Okay, let's put it this
way. Anybody who knows me knows that I hate prologues.
Yeah. Just as a side note, and this is the last tangent I make before we end this.
Well, we can keep going on tangents. I'm cool with that. You're the one that has to edit this.
Kevin Smith's new film, Cop Out.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, it looks ass-tastic.
Okay,
I am not impressed by the trailer.
I was very the general feel is, and this is even among the really hardcore Smith fans, which I'm on the edge of.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer was terrible. It wasn't funny.
Right.
He has come out and said very publicly on his Twitter feed and on his boards and stuff. He didn't cut the trailer. The trailer was cut by marketing.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah. The first test screening happened, and everything that's come out of the test screening has been overwhelmingly positive. So...
My problem with Kevin Smith, because I'm starting to have a problem with Kevin Smith, I feel like I'm growing up and he's not.
He didn't write this one.
I know he didn't.
Yeah.
I know he didn't. But,
which was one of my big concerns.
Right. But my favorite movie of his hands down, is Jersey Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can relate to it.
Yeah.
And it's one,
his favorite movie of his.
It used to be his favorite, but now publicly he disowns it in the same way that he publicly disowns Mallrats.
Actually, that's not true.
He does. I've heard him say it.
He was just talking about Jersey Girl the other day on Twitter. And was actually speaking of it very positively. He's like, I'm the only person that loves that movie.
I'm probably the other person.
Yeah, I love it too.
Because I think it's a great movie. I think it's his best movie.
It goes back to talking about what we were talking about before the show started. And a subject that I didn't want to discuss. That's exactly why I love that movie.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to ever be in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it comes down to.
Yep.
No, he still loves that movie. Now, He will bag on it.
He bags on that the
but
same
not
way
on the content.
What
he bags on is he bags on the way people didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And he bags on the way the studio didn't get it. But he does not actually bag on the content of what he put in that movie.
He bags on it for the purposes of playing to the fans who don't like it.
Yes,
and that's the problem I have with him because I started to have that problem with Mallrats because. Mallrats performed so poorly at the box office that he bagged on it. Because he knew other people would bag on it because of how it performed financially.
But here's the thing.
But see, he has bagged that movie since then. At the same time, I've also heard him praise that movie.
He's also a person who is very self-conscious of his mistakes and very self-critical. And he sees Mallrats and Jersey Girl as being the two places where he didn't listen to the people he trusted about what was going on. He knows now that he should have stood up to the studio about the changes they wanted made to Mallrats. He also knows that when he made Jersey Girl wasn't the right time. Yeah. No, because what happened was,
well, he made it the right time. The problem with Jersey Girl was that it was negatively impacted by contracts that studios had with the release schedule of Geely.
Well, it's that. It was also the tabloid relationship that Affleck and Lopez were having. But as far as the wrong time in his career for that movie.
I disagree because I think that movie, I wouldn't have liked to see him make it in any other time. Because I thought that movie, as it stood, was very well done.
Well, he wanted to make it then because he wanted his dad to see it.
Yeah.
And that was really where it came down to.
Yep.
And professionally, it may not have been the best time for him to make it.
I don't know. I feel, for me, it's still top in my Kevin Smith collection. I still say it's his best. I still don't own Zack and Miri. I think Zack and Miri is a very funny movie. Adam thinks it's the funniest movie ever made.
Adam is wrong about many things.
It has some very funny sequences.
Including his list of top five movies. His list of top five movies is deeply flawed. While I like many of the movies that is on the list of his top five movies,
he has also not seen a lot of movies by comparison.
He is wrong about many things. And while I have not seen what he considers to be the best movie of all time, and I know many people who consider it to be the best movie of all time, I won't dispute it.
What's that?
Shawshank.
You haven't seen Shawshank? Oh, okay. That's a shame.
It's just one of those things that's on the list.
You'll get around to it, yeah.
It's not like I actively want to see it. It's not like Gone with the Wind.
Have you seen Gone with the Wind?
Nope.
Gone with the Wind is
you are about to waste a whole lot of your listeners' time.
No, no, no.
Because you will never convince me to watch that movie.
Gone with the Wind is best viewed in fast forward until you get to the last 5 minutes when Rhett turns around and lays the shit out to her.
Oh, yeah. I've seen pieces.
I hated that movie. I hated every tortured moment of watching that movie. Until the line gets delivered, yeah. when she's finally coming after him,
the frankly, my dear line.
She comes up to me and she's like, "I'm ready to accept you."
Yeah,
and he's like, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." At that point, I stood up and was like, "Yes,
okay,
in your face."
It's one of those movies that was presented to me for years and years and years as this wonderful movie, and it's just one of those things that I will never watch because of how much people harped on it.
Yeah, this movie
I won't see just despite my father-in-law's Blood Simple, which is one of the Coen Brothers movies.
Yeah,
I've harped on that movie that I will never see it.
Now, I have made a point to see movies like Citizen Kane, Casablanca, and I understand why those movies are as well-respected as they are.
Ladies and gentlemen, Luke Meyer.
I don't think they are...
Oh, look at that. That's weird.
They are not my top choices, but they... where do you see Luke?
Spooky Loogie, 136.
Oh, there he is. Casablanca, by far one of the most quotable movies. And solid quotes.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
I've seen it.
And that movie is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I've got weird movies that stick out for me. I don't like the whole... Well, I'm a fan of the high fidelity top five list concept. My movie list never works because I can't just go all time movies. There's too many things.
People have asked me to.
I can narrow it down like Kevin Smith films or doing sci-fi.
Doing this movie podcast thing, yeah. I had to because it's inevitable. You know, what's your favorite movie? It's an inevitable question that comes up when you start doing this. For me, it's very simple because I do have a favorite movie, a movie that I can watch over and over again that I think stands up in every way that it presents itself, North by Northwest.
Okay.
And it may not be the greatest movie of all time, but for me, it is my favorite movie.
I mean, sentimentally, there are two movies that I will watch over and over again, but that's because they are movies that are from my childhood and from... There are movies that are not kids' movies that are from my childhood that I will always have emotional things attached to.
Mm-hmm.
That's The Great Escape and Bridge Over the River Kwai. And that's because those are both tied to my grandfather. And, you know, I can watch Great Escape. I'll be flipping channels.
Ever watched The Great Escape.
Oh, God, it's a great
movie. I know, I have seen Bridge Over the River Kwai a number of times.
Bridge Over the River Kwai is awesome.
And Alec Guinness is...
Officers will not be manual labor, period.
Yep. Fan freaking tastic. I like your spike there.
Yeah.
So, all right, I think we've gone well beyond.
He said we are related. Okay, Rich. Oh, that's only once a year? Really? I think it stands to if you're flipping through the channel guide and it's on, the channel must switch to that film.
All right. So we're done talking about an airplane, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Enough for a boat
and in a complete change of pace, next week we're talking about Gran Torino.
Yes.
Eastwood holds forth.
Eastwood directs and acts, and boy does he do both.
And actually, Rich, the theme for The Great Escape actually used to be the ringtone on my phone when I had a Nokia cell phone.
Nice.
It was awesome.
All right.
So let's wrap it up. And Gran Torino, for those of you who are both listening in the chat room and, you know, who listen to this whenever the sequence of release between the two episodes will be, I found it most recently at Redbox. So it's pretty easy to find. Somewhere. It's pretty easy to find right now. It's pretty easy to come by.
And you can catch it pretty much on some pay-per-views and even on some of the free channels.
Yeah, I think some of the on-demand stuff.
I think it's actually on one of the movie channels right now.
And if always worse comes to worse, Netflix or iTunes.
Yeah. Yeah. So. All right. See you guys next week.
Goodbye.